Welcome to the 56th Monk and My Back podcast. Contact us at monkcast@gmail.com with comments, observations, and most importantly, contributions. We take a stand around our spinning orders, continue to gibber excitedly about the thought bubble convention needs, and this week John is back to spotlight Alan Moore's seminal Swamp Thing, so no pressure there then. Mumcast, the comic book podcast that would almost certainly sort out its wives and mistresses before getting trapped in the first place.
Yeah, you got through it.
Around
you sold the line that James wanted you to as well.
Yeah, she fucked it up at the top, but otherwise she was great.
Yeah, and I like how you glazed over it. Around the mic tonight are...
Me? What?
You say your name,
the
John.
John!
Prima donna of Nick. The Mumcast.
Nick's here. No, I don't. It's like suddenly I don't know how to say who I am either.
Hello, my name is James. I'm pleased to meet you.
And I'm Jane.
Yeah, all right, you too. Well, John and I cleared the ground. We prepared it for you.
Well,
being so rubbish, anything you said would have been, any introduction you two said then would have been fine.
I think really we are the... You're the make weights, really, you two, aren't you? Me and Jane are the I think what you'd probably refer to as, I'm doing air quotes, the talent.
We're the talent. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, it's probably time to switch off now.
Yeah.
Call 2080, missing 5-year-old child. Police attended, child found.
What was that all
Excellent.
About?
Excellent.
Through the Greater Manchester Police Force are, like, tweeting all of their calls out today. So what I'll do is... I'll be updating throughout the podcast on any heartwarming or interesting ones. See that story there? That, if that child had been a pretty child, especially a pretty blonde white child from a middle class family,
the presses would be rolling right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no. So I think what the police are doing in Manchester is wonderful today because it's giving people a bit of an insight into the stuff that goes on around. Anyway, that's all. Nothing to do with comics.
Thanks for that, Nick. But it is topical. I like the fact that John turns up, disrupts us. His first action on the podcast is to cover up our running order so we don't know what we're doing. Did you see him do that?
No.
He's given me an innocent look now, like he didn't mean to do it. But I think, actually, you're the Lex Luthor of the Mumcast, aren't you?
He just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, you have got the hair. You don't. I found out today that Jane's got a superpower.
I do.
Cheers. What is Jane's superpower?
Jane has the power to, with just a cigarette, make a woman fly off her bicycle.
How did you do that?
Now you're making it sound like it's my fault.
She totally flew off it. She rode
it
straight
wasn't
in,
my fault.
She rode straight into a letterbox and came flying off her bicycle.
But it wasn't my fault.
Yeah,
and she said, she did. The first words out of the de-bicycled woman was, "It was your cigarette!"
Which we were walking down a road in Southampton.
It's called the Avenue.
Yeah, on a path that to a certain point it's quite clear it's pedestrians and cyclists, but then the point is quite fuzzy. But we know that it's pedestrians and cyclists. So we're walking at a normal pace, trying to stay relatively in the middle so cyclists can go both sides.
Smoking cigarettes because we're cool kids.
Yeah, because we're cool and we cave to peer pressure.
And they're full of vitamins.
Yeah. And one cyclist zoomed past me, and I wasn't doing anything particular. I was just walking along. I happened to be smoking at the time.
Yeah.
And then the other girl thought she was going to zoom past as well, but misjudged the distance between my body and the postbox and sort of curbed her wheel into the postbox and then came off. Yeah. And we asked if she was okay, and then she tried to blame it on me.
Well, no, we said, "Are you okay?" And she said, "It's your cigarette!" And then we sort of just loomed over her for a bit. She got back on her bike and rode off into the distance.
She was okay.
I hate her.
Do you?
Yes,
I don't hate... She was embarrassed. It wasn't my fault. It was quite clearly her fault.
Yeah.
And, that's my superpower.
That was your superpower. You got the ability
to
make
people... You gave me a name as well, didn't you?
Yeah, Fag Ash Lil.
That's what that was all about earlier on.
Yeah.
I did wonder. I thought you were both just chuntering on.
No.
Fag Ash Lil. I think she should become part of Ideas Man continuity.
Ooh.
Fag Ash Lil.
I think Fag Ash Lil might actually be... still in copyright though.
with
wasn't her. That Lily Savage character or
Gush,
something?
No, Lily Savage character was Lily Savage.
No, I think it was someone that she talked about a lot.
I think it's in Fag Ash Lil's in pretty common usage. You have trouble maybe copywriting Fag Ash Lil. Wasn't
know.
It from the popular 80s sitcom Bread? Oh no, maybe. That was Lilo Lil, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, sorry.
I've never actually heard the name Fag Ash Lil in my life.
Right.
Ever.
I'm sorry if I've insulted you. The reason I said it should be an ideas man, David, I'm talking directly to you now, laughing it up in Spain, is because it just for some reason reminds me of Punching Judy.
Punching Judy?
Punching Judy. You know
Judy
the character
Fenn.
Punching Judy?
Yeah. Well, she Finnegan. Did get
ideas
from
here. Ideas man.
Yes, in ideas man, yeah. What did you watch?
No, he said Punching Judy. I was like, well, she did get hit for a lot of the shows. It always seemed to be about Judy being hit by Punch.
In the
show, not actually Richard and Judy.
No, that would have made this morning.
Yeah, the whole of Punch and Judy, which is one of the entertainment artifacts that our entire culture ultimately is kind of based on, is about spousal and familial abuse. Because the baby gets chucked around. And
doesn't it get fed to a crocodile?
Yeah, I think at some point. I think everyone gets fed to a crocodile eventually, though. Really? The crocodile, in this analogy, is the Tory party.
I hate those bastards.
We all get fed to crocodiles?
All of us.
I was told we just went next door.
When you... geek callback. James looks a bit confused.
In my utopian society that I'm going to create on the Isle of Wight...
I don't think any utopian society really stands a chance if it's on the Isle of Wight.
Tories are going to be forced to be nice to people and share things.
What about liberals?
When
are they going to stop being
nice? They're going to be forced to not agree with people.
They'll be forced to make a decision.
I don't know. This is falling apart already.
Yeah.
Right, so what have you guys all been up to this week? I want to know what John's been up to because we never know what he's been up to.
So far this week, I've not done a lot already. I've been reading Swamp Thing mainly.
Really?
That's good.
Why have you been reading
that? I like that.
Well, tell us all about Swamp... Not really. Tell us later.
I will do. Apart from that, no, not much. Am I still dead?
No. Jesus, we established that you weren't.
What the hell?
We established you weren't on the last podcast you appeared on.
In fact, so
not
my
only,
skills are
not,
better.
So we've retconned the continuity of the podcast.
Not only did you not listen to the podcast, you didn't even listen to the one that you were here for.
No, I did. That was the last... I listened to that. It was great.
Why? Nick has been very weird. Yes, you've been reanimated and your sewing job is much better now. You look more human. But you still are under my power, so when I tell you to do things, you have to do it.
That's what she thinks.
That's what she thinks.
That's part of the necromancy touch.
Is Gene Hackman in the first Superman film? Is he wearing
a wig? He's Lex Luthor,
It turns out later on, because I only saw the beginning bit of it recently. Yeah. And
You should have waited for the bit where the dam collapses, because the special effects there are just to die for.
I'm still a bit freaked out by the lady who turns into a robot in Superman 3.
I went to see that at the cinema in Bournemouth when I was with the Cub Scouts.
ABC or Odeon?
Oh, I don't know. What's the one that's... Oh, I don't even know the road. It's opposite the Winter Gardens.
There's ABC or Odeon there.
Are they both opposite the Winter Gardens? Would it help you to know that it had Flashdance on at the time?
So before I was born.
Isn't it? What's the... it used to be like the nice place that you go in for a cup of tea that my gran liked. Nick keeps putting life-size pictures of people's heads on his iPad, turning his iPad round and pretending that those heads are replacing his own. Oh, no, but that one's failed, because it turned.
I thought the first picture was what Nick would look like if he cut his hair and shaved.
Yeah, if he
the
was a handsome
man. The peculiar thing
man.
About the first picture is it's supposed to be made up of... It's a composite image of something like 60 male faces, and it's supposed to be the composite... This one is the average of... 15 attractive female faces.
That is attractive. Looks not unlike Natalie Portman.
I quite fancy her.
Really?
But she's not real.
Certainly that visual medium works very well on the podcast.
Yeah, I think... I mean, we haven't got the video camera here with us this week, so...
what's the point? You've got hours of footage that you haven't put on YouTube of us yet.
Yeah, that's because normally it gets spoiled by someone saying words or something, but they're not supposed to, James.
Well, I know, I haven't got a problem with people hearing me say see. They're only words, after all.
Yeah, but it's like a rule or something. Nick is iPad autistic.
Yes.
That's not very nice.
I tweeted that a moment ago in the reality that we're living at the moment, which is no comfortable one.
Well, yeah, because we're trying to find out what Nick's done this week, but... Yeah.
He's become autistic, yeah.
What have I done this week? The weekend was really, really busy. You were not getting this.
I was about to write a swear on the iPad and I realised that you're tweeting someone at the moment who I desperately don't want to send a swear to.
The weekend was really busy. I went to Marwell Zoo and looked at animals.
How did you enjoy it? Because I went a few weeks ago. Do you remember I told you about Scarlett puking all over her head?
That was then.
Yeah, that was when we went to Marwell.
I think you told me that the other day. Nobody puked on me or my head.
Cool.
And I saw tigers.
Meerkats.
Tigers are bigger than I always thought.
They're very big.
Are they bigger than lions? I always assumed lions were bigger.
No, tigers the same size.
I think tigers are bigger now than they were in the 80s when you were growing up.
Like everything else is getting smaller though. Yeah. All the chocolate bars are getting
Curly
smaller.
Curly Whirlies are smaller, yep. Tigers are bigger.
I imagine lion bars are probably smaller as well. I looked at penguins for a little minute, that was good.
You have to be really careful with the penguins though, because the penguins are the first thing you see at Marwell. You have to be careful not to spend too long looking at them.
Because they're so cute.
Yeah, but they're real time thieves. Mm.
I'm trying to think what else we saw. Yeah, that's
they
kind
steal
of...
clocks.
They do.
You know what? Basically,
Flavor Flav's a penguin.
Basically, if they put penguins... and then they put meerkats.
Mm.
Nobody would ever get... In fact, they could claim they've got a whole zoo there, sell all the other animals to, like, I don't know, other zoos or nature reserves or private owners or high-class restaurants.
And they could teach them to say, pick up a simples, and you could have all the adverts.
Yeah, and they could basically have them... Because they could rely on people only getting as far as them, assuming there's loads of other stuff, but the place closing at about...
Have you been there when it's about to close?
No. I can't remember.
We were the other week. It's really eerie. It almost feels feral when there aren't many humans there. You feel like you're outnumbered by all of these animals, and it's almost intimidating.
Almost.
It's quite an experience. I suggest you try it. If anyone's in Hampshire and they wish to try it, it's Marwell Zoological Park. It's just off the M3. And it's very reasonable. I think it's £11 for adults.
It was quite expensive, actually. It was £18 for adults.
Momcast, sponsored by Marwell Zoological Park.
If I was an insane geneticist...
Yes.
This is something I would have done this week. Insane geneticist, I would create a hybrid of a mole and an animal. And I'd call it an animal.
An animal. A mole and an animal.
Dear. Yeah.
Like the Muppet animal.
Mm. Oh, I see. A mole.
Yes.
No.
Just like that.
A mole.
So, has anyone not said what they were doing this week? I wasn't listening. I was on the iPad. What did you do this week, James?
Not much.
That's all you've got for us.
I've been looking after... I don't really want to say that I've been looking after baby again, because I talk about her quite a lot.
Oh,
and I don't want to become one of those boring parents that... completely surrenders their identity to their offspring. But I can't help it. What else have I done? I done walk up a hill.
Did you come down a mountain?
And I done walk in a forest.
Oh, I walked in the forest. That's what I did last week as well. If I was a mad geneticist, I'd mix Eric Morecambe with a baby. And it looked like you. You look like...
Wahey!
I already kind of wanted to cuddle Eric Morecambe if he was still alive, but now I really want to.
I am alive. You can cuddle me whenever
because
you like.
Because he's dead.
No, I mean, now I look at James and think, he's like Eric Morecambe if Eric Morecambe was more cuddly.
Mm.
Do the thing with the glass again.
Wahey!
That's perfect.
Thank you.
What did you do, Jane? Jane keeps really scowling at me tonight. I don't know what that's about.
I've got something wrong with my contact lens, and it's really scratchy in my eye.
Oh, that's no good.
Is that what you did this
week? Giving me the baby? She's sticking her finger up at me.
I'm not. I discovered I had superpowers.
What superpowers?
The power to make
the power to make things. Sorry, I thought there was another one that, you know, was more impressive.
Yeah, only affects people on bikes near post boxes. So it's not a very good one.
There's a character in Mystery Men who had the best power ever, and that was he could be invisible, but only if no one was looking at him. Which I just thought was the best power ever.
Can I caveat the bike story? She was going irresponsibly quickly.
Yeah, she was going
considering
very fast.
She was on a shared path with pedestrians.
Yeah. I cannot be bothered with
and there
people
was more
like that.
Room on the other side of the post box where it was a grassy area than there was in between me and the post box. I really didn't understand why she decided
maybe
to do
was
it.
Checking out the junk in my trunk.
Maybe.
That'd be why she'd like, because blaming it on the cigarette is completely random and doesn't make any sense. Maybe it was just the first thing she could think of.
I wish she'd pointed at me and just went, "It's the junk in your trunk," and then got on her bike and
brilliant.
Cycled off. That would have made my life.
I think she's trying to make me feel guilty for my unhealthy lifestyle.
You should have thrown your cigarette at her.
Well, I was going to say, clearly her attempt at a healthy lifestyle actually wasn't that healthy.
No.
She's the worst kind of monster.
I've been in mourning.
Who died?
My hair.
Your hair died?
Yeah. Jane is sick of this. And John hasn't had it, but he's sick of it.
I'm not sick of it. Tell me the whole story from the beginning.
I had my hair cut on Friday.
That's not the beginning. What was your first ever hairstyle? No, carry on. Just from the pertinent part of the conversation.
And I asked for 2 inches off, and she chopped off 5, and there's a big difference between 2 and 5 inches. So now I have shorter hair than
That's
I wanted.
Like reverse man disease, isn't it? She was supposed to be going for 2 inches and went for 5 instead.
I can't even be bothered to make a series of obvious jokes based on the word inch. To be honest with you, I'm so tired
and she kept
of
trying
the
to
hair
my
story.
Hair off as well.
Which is,
my
her
hair
looks perfectly
weird.
Nice.
Thank you.
It and does. It's still a lovely, acceptable length. But
I thought this was one of those completely made-up things that Jane sometimes says.
It's just attention-seeking behaviour.
It's not. Oh. It's, what can I do? She's cut my hair off. I can't get it back.
It looks fine.
Thank you.
I like it.
I know, I'm happy with it. It'll grow fast enough, but I'm just annoyed at the crap size.
Jane, it looks better than fine. It looks rather fine.
Looks quite good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But I kind of, if I was a girl, I'd probably keep my hair quite, is it gamming? Quite short. I'd like a bob. I like that on girls. Mm. I like chic.
Short for Kate.
Yeah, that's right. It's a funny name for a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Bob is short. I think
I'm completely misquoting an entire swathe.
At least you knew what I was talking about.
The stupid thing is, I was talking to someone about that very, very episode of Blackadder earlier today.
I find it
and I can't believe I didn't. This is one thing that did happen to me this week. 2 things. I spent most of my life in Debenhams. I'm really pointing at you.
You're really pointing at me.
I spent most of my life in Debenhams earlier in the week trying to get some stuff. But earlier today, I actually tweeted about this earlier, so you might have seen this. There's an office where we have to go to get our hot water for our water for the kettle.
Okay.
And I went through the door into the office, came back through to go back to my office, was coming up to the double doors. They're like on an electronic key tag lock. Came up to the double doors, registered that there was a piece of paper on the door, read it, that's fine, it's okay. Mm. Went to open the door, it didn't open. Tried to press the button to open it again, didn't open, thought, well, I go through this door every day, but is it maybe a push rather than a pull? So I was trying to do that, and then all of the women who were sitting at the desks right near me said, that door's not working, you have to go around the other side. And I said, oh. And then I remembered what the sign had said and said, oh, I actually read the sign and took in what it was saying. There was a big sign saying, I was that person. I was the person who doesn't read the sign. We used to laugh at that person when he used to try and get into Food and Planet after the closed sign was in the door. But I am that person now.
And dropped to his knees, banging again. Please,
can I have my comics? Yeah, so I was that guy. And now I've compounded that embarrassment by repeating it again.
Nothing. You know that guy in Forbidden Planet?
Yeah. Is that you?
Well, not in Forbidden Planet, because it was closed.
Outside Forbidden Planet. No whispering!
I can't hear what she said. I've got a what?
Something, something cock, something.
What?
That's skiving.
What about it?
the story you told me today.
You want me to spunk that one away on the podcast?
Well, I was thinking about embarrassing. I was thinking I've heard something that's more embarrassing than
I told Jane a story about myself that I never told anyone today.
And she's just mentioned it on the podcast.
And she said, your college story, she said in my ear. When I was at college, I was very, very lazy, and I skived off for some time. And my lecturer phoned up to see where I was during the day, and my parents were both out. That's how I lived at home. And to try and throw her off the scent, I pretended to be Italian and denied her knowledge of... Oh, Jim, sorry, no, he's not here. That's the voice
that
I did.
That was your Italian voice, but, that's brilliant.
But the thing is, she knew it was me, and she was really persistent.
He's a nut to hear.
James, is that you? No, no. It is, isn't it? No, it's not. I didn't go back to that college.
That's like that Harrison Ford video thing that was I saw the other day. But I can't remember the whole thing. Oh, I bought a dog from an ironmonger's the other day. Soon as I got him in the house, he made a bolt for the door. That's courtesy of my friend Becky on Twitter. Everyone's going quiet.
Shall we talk about comics?
Yeah. I don't know where mine are. Where the hell are my comics?
You're first up, Nick. You should be preparing rather than telling us shit jokes.
My comics have disappeared.
Someone
should cover for me, yeah. Oh, I know where they are. It's all right, I can do it, Jane. This is Forbidden Planet carrier bags for people.
You're listening to Momcast. Thanks for tuning in. We're having some technical difficulties right now.
I bought a load of comics. It was a big week at Marvel for me. Lots of like Matt Fraction stuff and Avengers and stuff like that. But two comics that were unusual in this batch were Hellblazer: City of Demons #1, written by Cy Spencer with art by Sean Murphy. I haven't had a chance to read that yet. I think Jane might be talking about it in a minute though. We like Sean Murphy, so that's good. I'm looking forward to that. But I also bought a comic which I really wasn't expecting to see on the shelf this week, called Chip, which is a comic by, I guess they're still Antarctic Press, even though it doesn't say that on the front of the comic. But it's completely created by a chap called Richard Moore. It's called Chip Second Crack. And it is about a tiny, tiny little gargoyle. I had no idea this comic was going to be in this week. I didn't know Richard Moore had something out. Now, I should preface this by saying I love Richard Moore's stuff. He did... I first became aware of his comics when I bought a comic called Far West that he did, which was basically a Western, but with loads of mythical elements in it. It was about this sort of elf bounty hunter whose partner was this gigantic bear, wisecracking bear bounty hunter. And, you know, they were, like, tracking down an ogre, and he had a pet dragon that he used for heists. And it all sounds incredibly twee, but actually just worked really, really well and felt really, really good. He also did a series which was kind of an all-ages series called Boneyard, which was set in a... It was about a guy who inherits a boneyard, a cemetery that's... full of like creatures and monsters and stuff. But he also did he's also done quite a lot of, I guess you'd call them, erotic comics, but actually they're pretty pornographic. But his attitude to the stuff is just I just love his artwork so much, and he can make some of the most transgressive sex just look really lovely lovely is the wrong word. His art's lovely. I love his line work and stuff like that. But this isn't like
that. If
you're
doing it right, you can do that anyway. Yeah. Is it naughty to say that the gargoyle on the front looks a little bit like Lockheed?
He does look a little bit. He actually looks quite a lot like Lockheed, thinking about it. Only really squat. That's Chip. And he's about 3 inches tall, but he thinks of himself as the most terrifying gargoyle that ever lived. This is kind of an all ages book as well. It's in black and white. And it's quite bizarre. The story centres around one of Chip's gargoyle friends seeing a creature that looks like a horse but with wings, and being completely freaked out by it. and Chip saying, that's the Jersey Devil, going and finding pictures, because Chip's really into cryptozoology. Mm-hmm. And none of the other gargoyles believe that any creatures like that can possibly exist, and it's the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard. Even though they're gargoyles. They don't believe in Bigfoot and all
gargoyles
this stuff.
Gargoyles are idiots.
But there's... it's just a really... sweet. There's loads of physical comedy in it, which isn't that easy to pull off in comics, and but Richard Moore does a really good job in it. He's got like an almost animator's touch to the way he paces things. And there are two human characters in it, one of whom Chip clearly has a bit of a crush on, who doesn't really seem that bothered by him, and there's a little fairy character and stuff. Chip's just this really funny little, he's like full of spirit and ego and stuff, but he can't obviously do very much because he's tiny, but he's convinced that, you know, even though he has to ask for help to get through every stage of everything, he still thinks that people are threatened by his ability to do stuff by himself and stuff. And it's just I wasn't expecting to see it there. I tend to always pick up Richard Moore stuff because I love his stuff, and it's just this really sweet comic, and it's not like anything else that's really on the shelf at the moment, certainly not like anything else I'm reading at the moment.
It oozes cute.
Yeah.
There are lots of comics doing the sorts of things that Richard Moore does with anthropomorphic characters and stuff like that. None of them do it with quite as much like skill in the art and the writing and the storytelling, though, and he does it all, and I just think he's great. And I think that's a really good first issue of a comic, and well worth picking up.
A dangerous one to pick up.
Why?
Because it's just so super cute. I'm now starting flicking through it. I want to read it.
It is, and it's... I mean, Antarctic Press don't put out a lot of stuff that... I think they've been going a while now, like several years now, and they do a comic called Gold Digger, which has been running for years, and, you know, quite well-known... And it's quite a well-known independent publisher, but you don't see most of the titles on the shelf. But I'm glad they picked up Richard Moore, because it's the sort of this sort of comic, Chip, by Richard Moore, because it is the sort of comic that your mainstream comic shops could easily get by without ordering.
Yeah.
So if you see it on the shelf, pick it up. It is lovely. Don't be put off by the fact that I said he's done quite transgressive erotica, because this doesn't really feature any of that.
I'm going to be searching some of that out later, though.
It's on the shelf. I can show you it in a minute. That's fine. Not while we're on the pod, though. That'd be a bit weird. So, that's me. What did you get,
my
Jane?
Turn. I bought issue 3 of Sweets by Cody Chamberlain. This comic's really getting some hype at the moment. A lot of people are really enjoying this. It's going to go quite far, I think. This is part 3, and it continues... it's the New Orleans crime story. So it continues with the... I can't remember his name, main character. I did read this, but I was being attacked by a puppy at the same time.
Can I say, while you're checking that although it might be being hyped now, when you picked up the first issue, we hadn't heard anything about it, and you were talking about it from the first issue.
Yes, yeah. I mean, James at the comic shop was hoping one of us to pick it up, and I already sort it out and picked it up. I can't remember his name. I'm really sorry, listener.
James, you just said... Oh, you mean the character?
No, the character. That's it. His name's Kurt. They're still in pursuit of the serial killer who leaves Pauline Sweets behind, and... the case is getting bigger because someone that Kurt knows was killed in the last issue. I can spoil that because that's been
happened
and gone
in the last issue, and not said who it is.
No,
so that's okay.
And
James, you won't know.
Oh no, it's true.
And in this issue, they pick up something in this dead person's system, and the story focuses more on that. I don't want to spoil this because I really want people to read it, but. This drug is very specific, and they are able to trace a need for this. This issue gets really exciting. I can't really talk too much about it.
That's fine. That's
because,
cool.
Yeah. A lot is happening in it, but I've mentioned this, there's a sort of the story within it, which is this really weird, gorgeous blue and green colour, and it's about following two boys and their mum, who seems to sleep with random strangers and things. that is progressing as well as it goes on, and I've actually something twigged in my head about that story as well and contents of the main story, so be interesting to see if that ties up. But really well written, really gripping story. I mean, the first two obviously set in the scene, but this one's really getting into the flow and you're really sort of thinking, what on earth, you know, you really want to know what's going to happen, you mean what's going on and everything. Cage Hamlin is immensely talented. I mean, the fact that he draws and writes this, and then there is the sort of story within the story.
He's a drawther.
Yeah, oh, is yes, the word you made up, yeah. Mm. And the fact that
this
quirky story in the story where the art completely shifts as well, but it just works really well within the page. It looks very odd when you see the really sort of rustic sort of hues within the main story, the contrast to this blue and green story, so...
It's stark. It's good.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Did we say this is before? This is before Katrina, isn't it? Is this leading up to Katrina, or is it after Katrina?
There's no mention of Katrina in it.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
What about the waves?
Beat me to it.
Do you know, it had never occurred to me. That's a really unfortunate juxtaposition of words, isn't it?
Isn't it just?
I did. I'm not going to talk about this one too much because I really don't know much about John Constantine apart from what I saw in the film.
Yeah, don't. You can disregard
don't
that.
Mention the film.
You can disregard
yeah,
the film.
Yeah,
I
like Keanu Reeves. So
I really like the film.
Do you like sad Keanu?
He is sad.
He looks exactly the same as happy Keanu and angry Keanu.
He's had a horrible life.
Bill and Ted, they might be doing a third Bill and Ted.
I have to say, though, I really, really enjoyed this City of Demons. It was gritty and it was good. I liked it a lot.
Good.
It's written by Cy Spencer and Sean Murray.
Sorry.
And Sean Murray we like. Yeah. No, I was going to talk about it.
Sean Murphy.
Picked it up.
Yeah.
Sean Murphy. Did I say Murray?
Yeah.
Who the hell's Sean Murray?
You made it up. I liked it set in England. I think it's set in England. There's English time.
All of John Constantine's English. Yeah. So it's sort of in the film, that's the one thing that seemed to really bug people. I quite liked the film. I can watch Rachel Weisz doing pretty much anything, though.
I can watch Keanu Reeves pretty much doing anything, so...
He's delish.
What about killing a puppy? Could you watch him kill a puppy?
Can we not talk about killing puppies, please?
Could you?
Could I watch him kill a puppy?
Yeah.
No, but I can barely watch him in, you know, movies, so...
So that's me, short and sweet, so...
Whereas in real life, you're tall and unpleasant.
Yeah.
That's a bit mean, James.
James, it's your turn.
Oh,
what
hello.
Have you got?
Stop reading James' comic.
We've all been really distracted today. It's been one of those. I'm sure it's not coming across, though. I bought a great deal of stuff, but I thought I'd talk about two biggins at the moment. Not sure how much I've spoken about Return of the Bruce Wayne.
Return of Robert the Bruce Wayne.
Robert the Bruce Wayne, Arc Sassanac, the bastards. Certainly don't think I've spoken about Shadowland in terms of talking about how I feel about it issue by issue.
I really love the covers they're doing for Shadowland.
Do you? I think it looks like Daredevil's doing something...
That does have a rather unfortunate
look. Expression is really
good. He looks like he's doing something provincial to Daredevil, to Bullseye.
See, yeah, but you see, your Twitter avatar...
Do you think
he overstepped a mark?
Oh,
and also, it looks a little bit like a stormtrooper if you squint at it. I'm kind of thinking
that Nick stepped over a line that shouldn't have been crossed.
I'm not the one who took the picture and used the picture and then brought it up with that cover.
But not for a second did I correlate that with my Twitter avatar. And certainly, it's never crossed my mind on my Twitter avatar.
I've not seen his Twitter avatar.
Because you're a good person.
I really despise them. I can't get over that.
I think you should talk about
I need closure on this.
Shall I find the picture for you and you can
see
what you think?
No!
Oh, God.
Oh, Nick.
I think you should talk about Shadowland.
I'll be an impartial advisor. Talk about Shadowland.
Actually, the look on your face is a bit... I'm putting that away.
I can't really go on.
I don't want to think about it.
Oh, man.
Let's move on. Should we move on? I'm sorry.
I'm struggling to move on at the moment, to be honest with you. Shadowland.
The computer tried to go to sleep. It couldn't cope.
I think I've complained in the past that I've found several runs of Daredevil previously decompressed. I found the beginning of Andy Diggle's run on Daredevil... decompressed to the point of distraction where I was getting really frustrated with nothing of any consequence, or so it seemed, happening for most of the book, with something tumultuous sometimes happening in the last page or two of the issue. I was finding it a frustrating book to read. Shadowland, of course, chronicling Matt's downfall, really, after being, I don't know, what would you call it, taken over by this shadow root, is it? Snake root.
Snake root, that's it.
Yeah, and he's full of nasty now, surrounded by his ninjas. This issue features Elektra very heavily, as well as a cast of Avengers. And it's basically all about, really, Avengers kicking ass and taking names. It's action-packed. If you like action-packed comics, then Shadowland kind of delivers on that. In terms of what it's doing to the Daredevil part of the Marvel Universe, I'm sure it'll divide opinion, because obviously not only is he fundamentally changed, he's clearly fundamentally possessed.
He's all over the place at the moment. He is massively possessed. There's something else inside him.
Isn't there?
At one point
it's Wolverine.
Yeah.
Never mind.
There's two ways I could have interpreted that.
There are any number of ways. None of them good.
Pick the one you like the most.
If somebody chose to, they could use Wolverine to solve the food crisis.
Oh, yeah.
This is something I decided in the shop earlier on.
If you don't mind eating people.
If you don't mind eating a mutant.
So this is kind of...
mutant on people.
Yeah, kind of. We just slice chunks off him, let him grow back, it'll be fine.
Wolverine is people.
Yeah,
Wolverine is people. How long do you think Wolverine would put up with that?
I think if he thought that it was for the greater good. He always puts a penny in the charity bucket.
Are you saying Wolverine's a socialist?
I wouldn't like to confirm or deny that. All I can say is that I'm not a socialist, and I've never been a socialist, and I wouldn't have him in the house, except for you, James. But I don't know. I don't really know where Wolverine's political stance is. I do know that he has a standing order in his account for £5 to Amnesty International every month. Don't know what you can read into that.
He's
really
a goddamn hippie. Yeah. Billy Tan's art throughout is excellent.
It's really good, isn't it?
Yeah. Some interesting really interpretations cool. of how Matt sees the world, or sorry, how Daredevil, because I don't think this is Matt. It's kind of, it looks like, what would you say, it's like heat vision, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks a bit like Predator.
Looks kind of funky, though.
I'd be interested to hear Chris's take on that.
I would too, and I'm looking forward to hearing it in person when we go to Leeds.
Yay!
Shadowland, for me, is kind of, I'm not a big Daredevil fan. It's kind of delivering for me in terms of action and fun. And I genuinely think that the Daredevil story was in desperate need of a little bit of a reboot anyway. So
I haven't read that issue yet,
I can understand why they want to do something like that. We'll see where it goes in the final issue, which is next month.
Feels like it's taking ages to come out, though.
There is some cool shit that happens in that book, though. I like it.
Are we due a Daredevil issue?
I kind of think so. I feel like I've missed
one.
Feels
like it's been a really long time.
Return of the Bruce. Return. Why do I keep
Return
doing
of the
that?
Bruce, the Robert, the Bruce Campbell. Yeah.
Return of the.
Why
Mac.
Do I keep saying Return of the Bruce?
Return of the Robert, the Bruce Campbell soup.
Return of Bruce Wayne, 5 of 6. Features a bit of a previously in the Return of Bruce Wayne in the front page where. Tim Wayne reminds us that Darkseid essentially has turned Superman into Superman. Jesus H. Christ.
Batman.
He's turned Superman and Jesus H. Christ into who?
Into Batman.
Oh, wow.
He's turned Superman into Batman.
Essentially, Tim Wayne tells us and some
JLS.
Tells JLS. At the beginning of this story, Tim Wayne tells JLS that he actually prefers the dance antics of what are they called, the dancers from Britain's Got Talent.
Not Destiny, something like that.
Justice League of America.
I think that's
the name, called. Not Destiny something. Or
Destiny,
whatever.
Destiny's Justice League of
Diversity.
Diversity.
I'm so sad.
Yeah, he tells
are
them
they actually that, diverse?
Let's not go into that right now.
I'm just.
I'm not sure they are.
Oh.
Return of the... Oh, fuck me. Return of Bruce Wayne is essentially a gumshoe tale that turns into a gothic horror story towards the end. It draws deeply from Superman... fucking hell. From Batman continuity.
Did you read this comic?
I'm not sure.
Do you know
sure.
who Bruce Wayne is?
No, I don't know. Is he Superman?
He seems to be harbouring some sort of crush on Superman.
I don't know why. I'm not a massive fan of Superman, I think it's fair to say. I don't know why. Maybe I stop calling him Wonder Woman at the moment. I just call him every member of the Trinity. It draws heavily on Batman continuity. Touches on some stories not only that feature in the Black Casebook graphic novel, which apparently are the books that inspired Morrison when he was writing R.I.P. Also touches on previous Batman continuity more recently. Is a damn sight more satisfying than last month's story, which I had trouble with, and ends with a curious incident that sets this up for an interesting conclusion. As I say, I wasn't massively keen on the last issue of The Return of Bruce Wayne, featuring Bruce Wayne, who was Batman up until the end of Final Crisis.
Did it not strike you possibly, and I don't mean sound cynical here, that obviously the last issue was the cowboy one with Jonah Hex, which seemed incredibly well placed for the Jonah Hex movie that came out that nobody went and saw?
I don't know if I'd want to be.
I want to see that.
I don't think I'd want to be as cynical to say that it was time to coincide with it. But having said that, and I think I said to you, Jonah Hex felt like he was kind of slightly shoehorned into the story. He didn't feel like he fit particularly well. Return of Bruce Wayne has been, as I say, I had trouble with the last one. It's been enjoyable individual issues, and this one is the same. It's an enjoyable individual issue that actually sets up an intriguing return. Next month, I guess. I did that so much justice. Probably the best review I've done on
it
there
was,
yet.
That was
They're definitely, definitely getting better, my reviews, aren't they?
Your single comic reviews, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Holy moly.
Can I just
ask? I'm going to do a Tintin next
just
week.
Just ask.
That'll make up for it.
Yeah, I'm going to call him Asterix the whole way through.
No, I noticed the advert for the DC Universe online. I just wondered, has anyone seen the 6.5-minute cinematic trailer for that?
No.
Because it's absolutely outstanding.
Is it good?
Oh, it's amazing. Like, you could... If you just sort of sit there and take it in for 6 minutes, just thinking, this is... Stop
it's
laughing.
Not...
No, but if you sit there and you watch it, it's an absolutely phenomenal
does it
piece
the whole
of
way...
CG.
Does it the whole way through at the bottom say not actual game footage, though? It's not actually
No, it's clearly cutscene. It's just cutscene footage, but it looks stupendous.
I've been playing Alan Wake. That's something I've been doing loads of this week, speaking of games that are absolutely amazing.
It's amazing.
Oh, it's a creepy game.
It's amazing.
How far have you got?
I've got as far as I've been in a mental hospital, and they let
How
me play
far
the
have
game.
You got in the game?
And then I got out of the mental hospital, and now I'm at a farm. So basically, I'm just visiting various places where I have seen horror films set in the last few years.
Rather than talking about computer games and breaking away from what we normally talk about, which is comic books, you douchebags, don't you think we should probably leave a break here to let our lovely contributor contribute?
Yes. Who, Max?
Yeah.
Yes. Max, we're going to let you contribute now.
Thank you.
In a minute, we're going to come back and we're going to pretend that we have listened to what you've said, but we won't have listened to what you've said yet.
He could say anything.
He could.
Oh my, how hilarious. Don't you agree, listener? Those crazy MOMB cast types and their sexy wily ways. But enough of that. I'm here to be a little audio bite to ruin the episode for you all with another bit of comic reviewage. And what could be more interesting than hear me talk about that creator who has his finger on the pulse of what geeks want, Mark Miller. Yay! More specifically, I'm talking about Superior, his and Lainel Yu's new series out from Marvel's Icon Inc. front. And it's actually it's not bad at all. I might even call it charming in its own little overly sweary way. You see, Superior is a story about a kid with MS who is granted the magical power of one wish by talking omnipotent astronaut monkey. So he turns into his favourite movie superhero, the wrestling championship belt-wearing Superior. It's a short little intro to what will surely be a much more complicated story, and it hits the beats quite well. For example, you'd expect a comic where the protagonist has a debilitating condition to be a miserable affair where it's all melodrama and such, but here it's kind of just explained as a sad thing made bearable by our main character having a really good friend out there for him. It's a refreshing approach to something like this, and so startlingly un-Miller that I almost did a double take to be sure of what I was reading. Oh, just hit me. I've rambled for 4-ish paragraphs about mentioning How Great the Art Is by Lionel Francis Yu. I've never really dug on his stuff in things like Secret Invasion, but here it's almost like it's by someone else entirely. The lines are crisp, everything looks gorgeous, and the set pieces are mind-bogglingly brilliant, which I think makes it the first time I can recommend a Mark Miller book on both the art and the writing. Feels weird. Makes my tummy hurt. So I best lay down and let the M-O-M-B overlords get back to business. Just one last note to say, OMG, I'll be at Thought Bubble in Leeds this year, ready to terrify any poor soul I see. So if you're there at the end of November and hear a decidedly camp posh voice, it may just well be me. Ta-ra!
And he Matt. Did!
Hey! Thanks, Max. That was brilliant.
Thank you.
It's going to be really difficult to find that break. Yeah. Thanks, Jane.
I don't think...
Hey!
I don't think...
How is that my fault?
Until...
He was the last person to speak.
Until Max explained it to us there, I didn't think I really understood about that there could have been infinite universes before the Big Bang.
Yeah.
And it's just a series of contractions and expansions. And certainly the multiverse theory that he came up with was both insightful and a little bit intimidating.
Wow.
Frankly,
what was that Horizon the other week? I can't remember.
I'd spent all this time thinking Memento was about something completely different from what it was about. So thanks for that, Max.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you very much
to all of our contributors. If you would like to contribute a piece to Momcast, we'd love you to. We love it when people send us what they think about comics and what's happening, preferably not about computer games, because we're not really a podcast about computer games. But if you'd like to contribute anything about geek culture, you're more than welcome to, and you can send your contributions to mombcast@gmail.com, can't you?
Yes, you can.
It might be a little bit confusing because Max's contribution, I think, is probably about half an hour long. The what James was doing then about the video games, he was having a dig at me and John. That was. Mm. It was a long time ago that it happened, but it's obviously fresh in his memory.
Yeah. Last week we were reviewing random sitcoms on BBC Three.
Mm.
This week, while we're on computer games, I really wish Nick had told me how dissatisfying Ghostbusters was before he lent it to me last week. What a massive disappointment I had last weekend.
Well, it was a present.
Want a present to me, though.
Oh, okay.
It's a
I quite
fun
liked
game.
It. I thought it was pretty.
It just disappointed.
What else do you want from a Ghostbusters game? You kill ghosts.
I don't know, a slightly more engaging experience.
Call 1595. Theft of laptop by sister 3 weeks ago, Manchester. That's not actually theft, is it? Theft of laptop by sister 3 weeks ago. What's happened there is her sister's borrowed the laptop and she hasn't given it back yet. And rather than actually call her sister, she's called the police. That's stupid. The police have to deal with so much stupid stuff.
Did she think, I'm telling, and then phone the police?
I think that's probably what happened. They haven't done anything since finding that missing 5-year-old child, though.
That's not good.
That isn't.
Talking about North, we're all quite excited about
the whole of the North.
The whole of the North. We're excited about going up North, aren't we?
Well, it sounds quite dangerous. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
we're not going that far North.
For the first time in my life. No, that's not true. We've been getting really giddy about Leeds. It's a month to go.
Especially as some lots of nice people we follow and talk to are going to be going as well.
At this point, we couldn't really give a shit about all of the really, really cool comic creators that we know who are going to be going.
People that we're going to meet.
Because so many Momcast, can we call them alumni? They're not really alumni. Well, yeah, look, they've been on it, haven't they? Alumni.
Well, yeah. Illuminati.
Illuminati.
The Momcast Illuminati.
That's quite, it's a secret conspiracy to mismanage the world.
I'm just looking it up on the thing.
You are.
Manchester and Leeds are... Where is Manchester?
I can't remember if it's above or below. It's one of them.
It's below and to the left as you look at it.
Leeds is below and to the left of Manchester?
No, Leeds is above and to the right. Manchester is below and to the left.
So it's actually further north?
Leeds is further north than Manchester, yes.
We're going further north than Manchester?
We are going further north than Manchester.
Well, I thought Manchester was as far north as England went.
No.
No. Berwick-upon-Tweed is as far north as England goes.
Your English geography is very good.
Yes, and my father and grandfather were born in Berwick-upon-Tweed, so I kind of know about
Did they have to wear tweed all the time?
They did.
Wow.
Especially when they were on Berwick.
Does everyone now wear tweed?
Everyone wears tweed.
And they walk around on tweed.
Which is why Berwick smells of piss.
Right.
So apparently...
Does tweed smell of piss?
It does, yeah. They use ammonia to set it.
Oh, I did not know that.
Great.
That's fascinating.
That's lovely.
Living and learning, that's the Momcast way.
So we're going, what are you going to be doing when we're in Leeds, John?
When are you in Leeds?
Between I've the 19th what day November the and 17th, 21st.
Isn't it? Oh. I think I'll probably be sitting at home and reading comics or watching 6 Feet Under.
I'll be queuing for 3 hours for an Iron Man drawn by Andy Granoff.
So we won't be using these then, John. Yay. Our tickets to Leeds.
Tickets. Exciting.
Sorry, I just had to...
Don't worry, Nick. I'll wire the funds from Zurich into your account.
From Zurich?
From Zurich. I made up that place.
No, you didn't. It's a real place.
are you the heiress to the Zurich's fortune?
I was going to say, you're wiring money from Zurich. You better watch out. That cheque will bounce.
Because it's rubber.
But it was better than Nick's crap jokes.
Wasn't my
crap
joke? Well, I don't know.
They stand shoulder to shitty shoulder with each other.
Why won't this? Ah, there you go.
Okay, well, there's a reason, John. Yeah. Sorry, isn't it? You're going to talk to us about Swamp Thing, aren't you?
Yep.
You ought to do that.
Do you have to do that now? Do you have World Thing in your head, but Swamp Thing instead?
Swamp Thing!
Because wasn't that the theme tune to the cartoon?
It was indeed the theme tune.
Seriously?
I used to watch Swamp Thing.
No, it was a cartoon that they made 5 episodes of and then never again.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
It strikes me that possibly they had got it tonally slightly off.
Well, it depends which sort of era of Swamp Thing you take, because it's been through quite a lot of metamorphoses as a character. Sorry, just to sort of go back to the beginning a bit and explain. Swamp Thing was originally created by Len Wein, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Back... Oh, and Bernie
Wrightson.
Len
Wein and Bernie Wrightson.
Yep. Way, way back in what I believe was the 70s. And it ran for quite a few issues. And oddly enough, in the beginning of Alan Moore's first volume, there's a wonderful retcon explaining what happened before, about how basically the Len Wein run ended with Swamp Thing being shot in the head.
Wow.
And dying. And sorry, also just to explain who Swamp Thing is, Swamp Thing was Alec Holland, who was a scientist working out in the swamps in Louisiana, and his laboratory was blown up, and as he was on fire stumbling around, he fell into the swamp. But there was some sort of formula in it.
He was a scientist, so I think it was one of those origins where there was some, I can't really remember exactly, but there was some formula or scientific thing. You just took it on faith that it was something to do with what he was doing. Yeah. That's right, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it was to help plants grow. I think it was to help plants grow and solve world hunger or something.
Yeah.
But when he was set on fire... And he fell in the swamp, it kind of all reacted and turned him into Swamp Thing. And basically, at the end of the Len Wein run, Swamp Thing ended up shot in the head, and he was dead. Till, basically, the title was really selling quite poorly, and Alan Moore came in, basically given the job by DC, and just they said to him, go nuts.
Not really particularly well known back then, was it?
No,
probably
this was
quite popular in 2000 AD, but
yeah, this was the title that pretty much made it for him. And what's quite good about Alan Moore's Swamp Thing run to begin with is that he basically starts off the first issue by completely undoing everything, ripping it to pieces, and just wiping the slate clean completely. Because the first thing you find out in the first issue of Alan Moore's run is that Swamp Thing isn't Alec Holland at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, he's something else completely. And so the entire run then carries on with the Swamp Thing slowly learning who he is, what he's capable of, and just his link to the Earth itself. And it starts off very much as kind of a horror title. Perhaps what's most interesting is that it starts off as a horror title that is still under the curfew of the comic book code, which was, at the time, if a book didn't have the code seal of approval, it wasn't considered to sell.
Yeah.
But after about the first, I think, 7 or 8 issues of Alan Moore's run, DC could see that he was kind of chomping at the bit, and they actually removed the code approval and just let him do what he just basically said, right, you've got free rein.
Is it fair to say that was quite a brave move at the time?
Yeah.
That's a huge move.
It's worth bearing in mind, and I think I'm right on this. It's worth bearing in mind one thing that people always forget about the comics code was it was an entirely voluntary thing that DC and Marvel did, partly to get out from under that whole Seduction of the Innocent thing in the 60s, but also partly to squeeze out some of the independent horror, like the independent comic companies that were bringing out, well, books not unlike early something, actually. So it was brave.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like they were going against the law or anything. It was something that they did voluntarily.
But in sort of breaking the code, as it were, and basically pushing the comic out to an adult market, this is what's, you know, seen as being the first sort of steps towards the creation of Vertigo Comics.
Mm-hmm.
You read Swamp Thing. I mean, a friend and I have had a very long-running argument that neither of us would agree on. He thinks Sandman was the more influential comic, and I think Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing, in that, definitely Swamp Thing.
It depends, because he argues that it was Sandman went to the mainstream, whereas I would argue that without Swamp Thing and its artistic stylings, its method of storytelling, it's very, very focused.
Heavy reliance on motorbikes.
Yeah.
The motorbikes especially.
I put that sound effect in especially.
I know, I thought that was stunning, the way you just segued it into the
background. I actually did it with my mouth. I mean, like a beatbox.
You're like the dude from Police Academy.
Mr. Mahoney.
Sorry, you're making quite an eloquent
point.
Swamp Thing is a very character-heavy book. Mm. The way you see it sort of evolve is from... It starts off as kind of a horror title, and then as sort of Swamp Thing goes sort of across the Earth in his own way, he basically bumps into a character that Alan Moore invented, who you might have heard of, called John Constantine.
Yeah.
That guy, yeah.
He's an American.
James was talking about him earlier on. You're such a liar, James.
The American dude. He's a bit of a sort of surfer dude, right?
Yep, that's the one. But no, basically, Constantine ended up in Swamp Thing almost kind of by accident. I think it was just, there's lots of stories about how he was actually created. But he basically turns up telling Swamp Thing that Swamp Thing has to go on a journey, which is what begins the start of the American Gothic arc. Mm. And the American Gothic story is where Moore kind of takes Swamp Thing across America to lots of different places full of vampires, werewolves, racist ghosts, and basically he just uses the story to explore sort of quite modern issues, like, as I say, racism, and all of menstruation,
misogyny, drugs. Is like in that one, in that story that you're thinking of, isn't it?
Yeah, the curse. And he just basically explores them but links them into a really sort of old kind of beliefs and ideas about horror and fear. And then as the American Gothic storyline comes to an end, he sort of brings Swamp Thing back home, but Swamp Thing finds out that while he's been away, his girlfriend's been arrested for having carnal relations with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been taken to Gotham City. And I just wanted to show somebody this because I noticed it the other night and thought this was hysterically funny.
Why I find that, can I just touch on, I think the reason I think you're in the right about that Swamp Thing thing is that as much as I love Sandman, Sandman's a very specific sort of story, and although Neil Gaiman explores a lot of styles over the course of it, it's all kind of got that lyrical, very like literature based approach to it, very similar sorts of characters throughout, and you can't see a line between what's happening in Sandman. You can't see a thematic line between what happens in Sandman and Preacher coming out,
yeah,
or even Transmetropolitan or something. But you can see roots of those books in Swamp Thing.
Yeah. After you've made such a eloquently mature point, does anyone else think it looks like Batman's hanging the title for the next issue off his jump?
Okay, you're gonna have to maybe describe what we're looking at.
It's effectively a picture of Batman stood on top of a gargoyle, who's probably about 3 inches tall.
As he's wont to do.
Yeah. But he's got the title for the next issue. Basically, even though there's no sort of discernible shape of his body, the positioning of it really makes it look like it's hung off his belt.
It kind of does, and it certainly looks like certainly the middle of the words, the garden, and it says next. Actually, it's worth bearing in mind that at the top, the line that leads into it, and I think this is something that Alan Moore did a lot of, the whole captions leading into what's happening in the next page stuff, didn't happen a lot in comics back then. But basically it says, one thing leads to another, and then there's a picture of what is almost he almost looks like he's not grinning, he's kind of grimacing. One thing leads to another, and then it's a picture of him, and he's slightly forced perspective, so it looks like he's pushing his belly out a little bit, and he's got next, Garden of Earthly Delights, written on his groinal area. Thank you to the artists on that.
You suspect, actually, having written... I'm sure we've all read some Alan Moore script. That probably didn't happen by accident, did it?
Well, no, it might have done, it might not have. I'm not, probably not.
No. It's highly unlikely.
And it's funny seeing Batman in that book as well.
Yeah.
He writes a really good Batman in that
book. Yeah, the fight between Swamp Thing and Batman is... I actually think it's kind of quite funny. It feels like... I mean, I've spent the past few days watching quite a few sort of interviews with Alan Moore about Swamp Thing, and the sheer passion and delight that comes off of him when he's being interviewed about the book, when he was writing it, is completely at odds with the sort of perspective that we see of him now as this miserable beardy man who just sits there moaning about comics. But when
specifically about DC and then about comics when he's done with that,
which is kind of the unfortunate thing really, and because
not as unfortunate as the heated argument you and I had about
long argument
about I think he's got quite an advanced sense of humour and he's very wry. And I think I don't think that gets picked up. Sometimes I think he deliberately says stuff just to fuck with people.
Yeah.
Not because he wants to get the column inches, which I don't think mean that much to him, but because it amuses him to do that. It's a very English sort of...
It's essentially the argument I was advancing to you when we were having, and you would, no, he's just a whingy old fucker!
It is worth saying as well that the people that get wound up don't mean an awful lot to him. Yeah. He's made his career off that. So it's sort of... but it is nice. So you're saying, is this recent interviews you've seen?
Oh, no. These are all from back in the 80s, including an interview I saw between him and Gaz Top on Get Fresh, excellent, which was absolutely wonderful, because the cardboard cutout of Swamp Thing actually did resemble Gilbert the Alien.
Excellent. Who was I remember Gilbert the Alien.
But back to his Swamp Thing run, after facing Batman... something very, 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 very drastic happens, and sort of it's interesting how the run, after starting off as horror and very, very slowly segueing into the mainstream, sort of takes a complete leap back out and turns into hardcore sci-fi. And we're basically, the run ends with this story of Swamp Thing making his way back across the universe to find his girlfriend, Abigail Cable. And it's basically the whole story, the whole run, can be seen as being about those two characters and their love. But there's some of the science fiction stories that are in the last book. I mean, you say about Alan Moore's propensity for writing very detailed scripts. It's an issue, if I believe, called Loving the Alien, which was...
Is that the one that's all... No, it isn't the one that's all. There's like... He did one issue, didn't he? You might be talking about it later. Actually, that he did the same thing in Promethea, where the whole issue is a love scene.
The whole issue in this, I do not even... Part of me actually doesn't even have a clue what goes on in this issue. It's very text-heavy, and I can simply imagine John Totler being sat there with a script that's about the thickness of
an armchair,
just going, Alan, what have you done? And just slapping together anything he could think of, because it's not like any other art I've seen in a comic.
You're going to have to be careful if you're going to show it to us, John, because you'll have to describe it again.
It's... Well, it looks like a collage. Yeah. The entire issue looks like a collage. It's the only way I can describe it. There's no... But it's so text-heavy. I actually read it the other night, and it took me... I can normally read the average issue of a comic in about 10, 15 minutes. And it was a good solid half an hour that I was sat there trying to fathom it.
It's not the first Alan Moore story that's essentially prose set to pictures, isn't it? Rather than being a conventional comic book.
And then that's followed by what is possibly my favourite issue I can't decide, which is called All Flesh is Grass, where Swamp Thing accidentally, while flying through the universe, hits a planet that's entirely made of vegetation. All of the people on it are actually plant-based, and of course him colliding with the planet creates a huge sort of apocalypse and drives Swamp Thing completely insane. He's got no idea what's going on, and it's left to Green Lantern, who happens to be wandering past. Not the Green Lantern, but the Lantern of, I think it's J536.
I hate that guy.
Yeah, well, look at him. He's got one eye and green hair.
He's a carrot.
He does actually look like a carrot. Yeah. But, I mean, the Alan Moore Swamp Thing run, obviously, as I said before, it's very much about, it led a lot towards adult comics. It brought, you know, it was one of the, it was the first comic to do away with the code completely and just step out on its own, which was a huge step at the time. But it's more than just sort of like a horror or a sci-fi or a genre comic. It's actually at the heart a very, very touching love story that has a lot to say about human beings, but also about how the possibility that, you know, they connect with the earth itself, that we live on the earth and the earth lives around us. And there's obviously some very heavy sort of environmental sort of nods in there, saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't be disposing of all that nuclear waste.
He introduced a metaphysical aspect to mainstream comics that hasn't really gone away since. That's the other thing. Yeah. That, like, it's possibly unclear when just describing the story at face value that what John's actually talking about specifically is he went from being like a shambling, like man swamp mutation to essentially being the way he's travelling across the universe is through this concept called the Green, isn't it? That's
how he lives on the earth effectively. Is the concept of the Green is this kind of effectively just an other place where he exists, but he is completely in touch with the universe. And at first he thinks that he can just sort of regrow himself very slowly in another part of the earth, but he slowly develops the power to just literally think himself somewhere else, and he will just leave his body where it is. It will collapse and degenerate, and then he will build another one somewhere else out of a tree or something. And there's also this wonderful scene where he goes to visit, is it the Parliament of Trees?
Yeah.
The rather sort of odd bunch of people who are just trees that are effectively just sat around, and they're all so much like the Ents. But you can tell that Alan Moore's just sat there going, what do people really hate about the Ents?
I think it's like it affected the way I mean, I can think of two stories off the top of my head that wouldn't have happened without that. There was a run of Animal Man which, well, basically when they revisited, when Grant Morrison revisited Animal Man, he basically rewrote him as kind of an animal version of what Swamp Thing is to the like plant world. Also, all of which sounds ridiculous when you say it, but these are quite big concepts, and he even had a story where he, for all intents and purposes, died, but had to find his way back through, I think it's called, it might even be called The Red in Animal Man, where he was handling similar issues, but like he was much more preoccupied with animal welfare and stuff like that. And the Red was actually, that story was actually written by Jamie Delano, which, but anyway. But the return of Bruce Wayne probably wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for Swamp Thing trying to find, because that's a very metaphysical idea,
isn't
absolutely.
It?
That he's
trying to find his way back through time, absolutely.
And it's also an exploration of the DC universe as it stands, and a way of rewriting it, not rewriting it, but saying this is how, it's what apparently Bendis is doing with Avengers at the moment, is re-examining and rewriting how magic works in the Marvel universe. And basically what Swamp Thing does first is he looks at the horror side of things, and then he looks at the cosmic side of the DC universe, and Alan Moore says everything that he wants to say about that side of things, doesn't he? And then it kind of examines, then it kind of examines how magic works in the DC, doesn't it?
Effectively it goes horror, magic, and then the sort of cosmic aspect, because all the horror titles tend to feature people like Deadman or The Stranger or Etrigan, and then the magic ones have got Constantine and Zatanna and sort of all that sort of bracket of characters. And then when he goes out into the sci-fi, there's Adam Strange, Darkseid turns up at one point, Metron, and like the Lanterns. And it is just basically, he's just there going, sort of taking him on this massive tour of the universe, like across like all aspects of it, and just going, right, that's your universe right there.
And that's not to play down Sandman, which is a great book, but it kind of, as much as anything, goes back and does an almost, it's a more literary and less free-ranging version of the same thing, but you know what I mean? I definitely think Swamp Thing, I haven't read those in a while, I've got my copies of them over there. So I forget the
order
of things.
That's on Nick's shelf.
On my shelf.
Just pointed to.
Interestingly, those are colour. The graphic novels you've got there are in colour, and the ones I've got are the old black and white Titan
ones. The first
ones.
Versions I read were the old black and white Titan ones.
And considering they were presented originally in colour, the art looks amazing in black and white.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely stunning.
I think the versions I got here, I originally found four of the volumes very cheaply at a comic convention, and this is,
like, that was the one we went to in London, right?
Yeah, it was. And it's before they redid everything with computer colouring. And it really does show its age in that case. It's not to do it a sort of disservice, but it does look very dated.
I kind of prefer to read those stories the way they were as issued, though, you know?
Thinking about it, what's probably even more, has maybe even more had more of an impact on comics in the sense of what's come since them is Hellblazer, which grew out of that.
Yeah.
Jamie Delano did a really good job on doing a quite political take on what Alan Moore had established about John Constantine in the first thing. But the stuff that Garth Ennis did with his run on that has a massive knock-on effect on the way all comics are written out. I mean, granted, not always good. The fact that there's more, like, outright violence and more, like, bad language in comics now is a knock-on effect of the stuff that Garth Ennis has done because of that. But again, none of that could have happened. I want to talk to your friend who said that Sandman was more influential because he's clearly a whimpering
goth. He's not actually a goth, but not? No, it's a
he
very long-ranging debate that constantly goes on and on and on. And
does he wear nail varnish?
What?
Does he wear black nail varnish?
Not black nail varnish, no.
Does he wear pink nail varnish?
Not that I've seen.
Red nail varnish. I'm not actually trying to establish now whether he's a goth. I think I'm trying to establish whether he's a transsexual.
What?
And James obviously knows who John's talking. No, he doesn't.
No.
Okay.
No idea.
Is it someone who might listen to this show? This is like Guess Who.
Is it William?
Does he wear glasses?
I think.
Does he look like a cuddly Eric Morecambe?
I don't want to invite John back again.
Why not?
He raises the standard of discourse about comics far too high.
I'm not sure
for my for my liking. That was really good. Cheers,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
That was terrific.
It was good. It kind of made up for my shit review of The Return of the Bruce Wayne.
We had some comic book history, didn't we? That was good. We had a history lesson. That's good.
I like it, but the only problem is I keep interrupting because John tends to cover the books that I really like and know quite well as well, so yeah. I end up hassling him. I'm sorry, John. Sorry about that.
Which is good, because when Jane and I are reviewing something, you interrupt anyway. So it's good.
Listen to your face. Not Jane's. Jane, I'll just do it to keep myself limber for when it's your turn.
No, that's good.
So I'm just a practice. You are limber. Yeah. Thanks.
But not long.
No, I don't mean any of that. I never mean to interrupt. It's just...
No, it's good.
No, it is. And you hate me.
James has been hypocritical.
He is a hypocritical.
I am. I'm just a hippo.
Oh, didn't see any hippos.
You're not going to Subaquatic Animal House? They've got the pygmy hippos.
I didn't see any pygmies or
hippos. It stinks in there. Really smells bad in there.
You know who smell? Bats. They're not scary. I don't know where the whole Batman thing comes from. They just smell.
I think if you're trapped in a dark cave and they all come flying at you, that's quite intimidating.
The other thing is, what's Frank Miller talking about? There's absolutely no way one of those things could smash through a window. Couldn't happen. Mm. Their bones, their little funny little puffy bodies would just explode. There'd be exploding bats on outside Wayne... Yeah, okay, wow. I'll stop now.
You're thinking about... Yeah, but you're imprinting modern glazing techniques onto a story that's over 20 years,
old.
And probably the windows in Wayne Manor at the point maybe you're thinking of probably were installed in the 50s or 60s.
They were probably ready to fall apart.
The putty was probably going and...
Wow,
they don't use putty anymore. I miss putty around
Windows. He'd been away for about 10 or 15 years as well, hadn't he? So Alfred wouldn't have been able to keep it all up.
I witnessed some windows being installed
with putty. Man, I miss putty.
Silly putty, I love that stuff.
Didn't break the computer?
Oh,
is it silly putty that smells of that smells really nice for a moment?
Yes.
Play-Doh. No, it's Play-Doh.
Play-Doh smells like pastry.
My mum wouldn't let me play with Play-Doh. I used to eat it. It smelled so
every
nice. Every kid eats it,
and they do it on purpose. So your parents have
to
buy more.
That's why it's non-toxic.
Yeah.
So your parents have to buy more.
Well, do you think it's non-toxic because they knew kids would eat it, or that they
because
made
they
it
wanted
non-top.
Children yeah. to eat it. I don't know.
That's all very peculiar. And all of your plasticine ends up brown. Did you ever notice
that? Yeah.
All your what?
Your plasticine ends up brown.
When you mash it all together.
I thought you said when you're passing it, it's always brown. Is that what?
We should probably go.
On that bombshell.
On that bombshell. We should go.
Thank you for being with us, John.
That's right. Thank you, Matt, for having me.
Thank you, Matt,
for explaining the universe to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, listener.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll speak to you all again next week.
Yeah. Bye-bye. We waved again.
We did.
In a bar, Johnny drinks, Johnny Walker, till he runs off a bill he can't pay. He's drinking to the memory of a prince in a pauper's grave. And it's go, Johnny, go, where the bruises don't show. In the churchyard where the nervous get wrecked. And turn off your wireless, for 2 minutes silence. Cough up and pay your respects. And go to the park where vicars and tarts pray for their tormented souls. By the American graffiti from Elephant and Castle, in Ford Capri Orange, and Volkswagen Yellow and drinks, Johnny drinks, Johnny Walker runs up a bill that the Pope couldn't pay. He's drinking to the memory of a prince in a pauper's grave. Johnny drinks!
James has got into the habit of tweeting while the show's going on and while he's around other people and not indicating that he's doing it because he thinks he's fucking clever. But it isn't a tea society, it's a teapot.
All right. No, Jane was talking about the tea society. The tea society say you should put milk in first. You didn't read the joke.
Yeah, because you were too busy touching me. No, don't tickle me, please don't.
You fucking glory boy, turn up. The fucking Swamp Thing, and then fuck off again for 5 weeks.
He's our power ballad.
Ballad?
A power mallard? Is that power a pretty strong duck?
He is. John's got the power of 15 ducks.
Yeah, that's what I said, wasn't it?
The ghost who
ballad? Moves. What is ballad? Ballad?
Yeah.
Ballad?
That's what I said.
Wait, you said
ballad.
Ballad.
I said ballad.
You mispronounced it.
Ballad?
Ballad.
Ballad.
You said ballard.
You said ballard.
Ballard.
Like Willard.
Power ballad.
A